Burning the Midnight Oil. Damn, having a job is fun. Hello there, Metal Faithful, and welcome to the greatest heavy metal podcast on the internet. I would know. I've listened to two of them. This is the Metal Hammer of Doom podcast. I am your, well, typical co-host, but right now your main host, since Mark Radulich is still on the wonderful Jonas Exodus that is filled with Superman onesies and apparently now a National Geographic channel. So have fun with that, Mark. I'm Robert Cooper, you know, occasional 411 mania rider, bearded wonder, podcasting aficionado, and guy who now has a job. So yeah, I have to work till 10 most weeknights. Ooh, yeah, happy, fun. And now we're back over here at the old metal hammer of doom. 2 weeks ago, we did a pretty cool retrospective, and this week, now we're back to doing something a little more, you know, typical. Yeah, album review. But, of course, I can't do album reviews alone. I mean, I can, but that would be about as entertaining as licking a stamp, sticking it to your face, and then trying to have your cat lick it off of you. Actually, that would be pretty entertaining, but I digress. That's right, I have a co-host with me, a special guest co-host, who usually co-hosts on another podcast that's pretty awesome on the Radisson Broadcasting Network called The Long Road to Ruin. That is right, I have Mr. Sean Comer with me. How are you doing, Sean?
You timed that opening ramble absolutely immaculately.
I did.
Okay, because right when you said we got 20 minutes of showtime, I got up, or no, actually, right when it said, your show will go live in 5 seconds, I got up, went over to my kitchen, finished the French press process for my coffee, got to add my sugar to it, grab it, stick the instant couscous in the fridge, and managed to shut the lights off, make my way over to the desk, set my coffee down, grab the sonic screwdriver that I play with when I'm thinking, and take my first sip of coffee right as you were introducing me as co-host.
That is just like impeccable timing, and usually I do not have that, so maybe you should just be like with me at all times, like in spirit, just so I can get things timed right.
Well, if you don't mind having someone who's kind of like, I guess kind of a metal intern, because I can't really call myself an expert or anything.
I mean, hey, that'd be cool. You know, metal intern would be that would be fun. I mean, hey, I mean, I'm not even an expert. I mean, I know experts. I'm an expert in training. You know, I'm a guy who has a column on the internet that occasionally writes it.
Well, you're no expert, but you certainly know the genre a hell of a lot better than I do.
Well, that's true. It just comes with, you know, a few years of obsessing and categorizing and talking. Oh, I love talking. But yeah, we actually have, I think I found a band that you like for today's retrospective, or not retrospective, duh, album review. We're doing a retrospective of this album. And technically it is retrospective since we did listen to it earlier. Yeah, but I went ahead and chose Epica. Usually I would just do the whole Mark thing of, well, why did you choose this? But, you know, actually I chose this. And I was like, hey, Sean, you want to do Epica?
No, more like you reminded me last night in the dead of evening when I was in the middle of work. Oh, yeah, did you still want to do the Metal Hammer of Doom this week?
Well, yeah. Well, I had asked you 2 weeks ago, and you're like, yeah, just remind me when it comes out. Okay. Last night, I'm like, oh, shit, I got a 5-page paper to write. Oh, shit, I got a podcast tomorrow night. Hey, Sean. And you're like, damn, you should have told me earlier. Okay.
And yet, here I am, suited up anyway and ready to go.
Well, yeah, and I thank you for that. It's going to be a fun time because, like I said, I was hoping to find a band that you dig, and while I can't exactly say I can match Nightwish.
Wasn't Starcher supposed to join us for this, too?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Maybe I just misjudged his Facebook tone. I thought maybe the way he was commenting last time, he was going to be on the show.
No, he was actually, I mean, he didn't really mention it to me. He didn't message me or anything. He messaged me on Spotify, and I was like, yeah, Epica, they're pretty great. Because I think he was asking to see if I needed help, and I was like, no, I got it. But yeah, I mean, hell, I'd love to get Jesse on here sometime. He's plenty of fun.
Oh, yes, the keeper of the protein bacon.
Yes, yes, him. But yeah, Epica I kind of picked because their last album in 2012 fucking blew me away. And when I saw this was coming out, I'm like, ooh, I need to podcast about this. And I'm like, oh, Sean likes power metal because you like Nightwish. And while this is not quite Nightwish, I think they do a pretty good job of matching them at times. So yeah, I was like, oh, fuck it, Epica. They're awesome. And what do you know, this, not to spoil too much about this podcast, but this, this album is pretty awesome. I can dig it. Yeah, what did you think about, what feelings did you get from Epica, you know, just like walking in pretty much blind to the band, just, you know, trotting in after being asked like, hey, yeah, I have this thing to do tomorrow. Want to join?
Well, they lived up to their name.
Yes, Epic.
It's orchestral, it's gigantic, and yet they have a female vocalist who, unlike with Nightwish, isn't quite as, doesn't sound quite as awkward in that setting. She's got a little bit of a different color and the same strength to her voice, but a little more of a fullness that's a little more accessible on the verses than I think some of the blatant operatic delivery of Nightwish.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more fitting. Because, like, Simone, the singer for Nightwish, she fits a lot better than, like, you know, I got used to Tarja and really came to enjoy her. But when I first listened to her, I'm like, this is kind of almost, I'm like, okay, yeah, I see what you could do there. All right, calm down. Like, yeah, that it was almost kind of ill-fitting, an approach.
Okay. I think I finally figured out the more succinct way that I wanted to put this. Tarja sounds more like an opera singer that was kind of awkwardly thrust into a metal band.
Yeah, that's actually what did happen to her.
gave it a college try, and actually, I'll be damned, ended up being pretty much a perfect fit. She ended up being the quintessential voice of Nightwish. Whereas
better than the other one.
Whereas on the other hand, and forgive me, I'm having to kind of defer to my notes a little bit to kind of look up who's who here. Epica, Simone Simons, just sounds much more comfortable, much more like somebody who's got the natural range and projection of a classically trained opera vocalist, but who's just always made herself at home singing metal. It sounds a lot more authentic and not quite so, gee, I hate to say Tarja sounds forced, but sometimes, I mean, sometimes she just doesn't quite blend as well with metal as it seems like either she or the band wants her to.
She does. She's kind of an odd fit, but like we had said on the Nightwish podcast, like, you know, she was odd, but it totally, by the end of it, you couldn't imagine it really any other way. And we heard it some other way, and it wasn't as good.
Yeah, actually, we heard what the alternative was, and we kind of went, I miss Tarja.
Yeah, we just were like, yeah, this is going long. Let's go ahead and skip it. These albums are kind of boring. But yeah, Simone, she is a Pardon?
And yet, they both sound better than Amy Lee.
Oh, poor Amy Lee. If only she weren't such a bitch. See, I've actually, like, the most awkward thing is if you have a crush on a girl and she makes a joke about M&S and you're like, yeah, they're not that great. They're like, oh, I love it. And you're like, oh, yeah, they're not that bad. I do that a lot, actually. I declare something is shitty and then I just start backing away from it slowly. Like, yeah, well, it's not that bad. Okay, well, it's okay.
Oh, I mean, that happens. Sometimes you're just not exposed to something when you're in the right mindset to really be receptive to it. I've had it happen with bands, movies, TV shows all the time.
Yeah.
I've had times when somebody, one of my friends, would try to introduce me to a TV show. Actually, good example. I, at one point, had two different people that I was very close to, both trying to introduce me to Bones. And the first time one of them got me to watch it, I just went, this is about 31 flavors of stupid. I don't want to watch this. Watch something else. And then about a year, 2 years or so later, met somebody else who suggested it. I went, wow, Bones is kind of awesome.
Yeah, I like that show.
Yeah, I think, well, it was good right up until Babies ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, that was bad. And I got tired. Yeah. I'm like, Bones was not that socially retarded at the beginning. Back up.
Right. But then what happened was the one friend earlier when I started saying it, you hated it when I asked you to watch it. Well, yeah, I was in a really bad mood when you asked me to watch it. That's the same reason why I've never given True Blood another try, because I associate that with the fact that when someone wanted me to watch that, I was about ready to want to strangle my ex at the time.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. I was about ready to go. I would wrap you in plastic if I thought I could get away with it.
That's great. Yeah. Usually I just, like, make very harsh statements off the cuff, and then I'm like, oh, I didn't mean it that bad. But I just start kind of wheeling the hose back onto the trolley. But, yeah, Epica is pretty good. Simone Simons is a great singer, and they actually, as we will all hear on this album, they also have some harsh vocals, which I feel are a just absolute great, like, contrast. Because, you know, have that really operatic, angelic voice, you know, belting out, and then all of a sudden you just roll. And I'm like, ee. Like, I like that as long as they don't overdo it. Like, there's some parts, as we'll get through here, I'm like, okay, calm down with the break. Calm down with, like, the core drums. Like, you know, I know it when I hear it. And it's very, like, a repetitious pattern. And I'm like, okay, calm down. We don't need this. You're a symphonic metal band. But yeah, speaking of symphonic metal bands, Jesus, we have went like 15 minutes of rambling. Oh well, it's not as bad as that time Mark and I went 20 minutes just talking about life. We'll do that. But yeah, let's go ahead and start with the first track, because it's just a short intro. I'll get your thoughts on it, my thoughts on it. It's going to be all fun, fine, and dandy. So yeah. Let's see if I can pronounce this correctly. So here's the first track. Let's go ahead and blast it out. This is called Originum. Originum? Originum. Fuck it.
Yep.
That's what I'll call it. That didn't sound right. Was that right? That didn't sound right.
That's not Originum.
Damn it. Well, that I downloaded the wrong track there. So, I mean, it was just a pretty cool
right
little...
Robert, did you listen to the right album?
Oh, no, I did. That was actually the only song of my... when I was doing my procurement of these songs for placement here on the Blog Talk Radio studio that I didn't listen to first. I was like, oh, that's the right one. Totally. I thought there was a problem when it said this was a 5-minute long song. But yeah, just a description of what Originum is. It's just, it's really a very symphonic, opener. It really just starts building on very, almost like a flat ground, and builds to like a very epic pyramid. It's a nice, nice showing of what this album is going to come to be, I feel like. So yeah, any memories of that song, you know, the one that was not playing up here?
Well, seeing as how I've listened to this album exactly once, and I just finished about 20 minutes prior to showtime, it's not metal at all, really. It is the only track on the album that you can kind of categorically say has practically nothing metal about it. It's just a big building symphonic prelude. And I honestly don't have all that much to say about it. It's kind of like how on the Smashing Pumpkins album, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, the intro is just a few minutes of this very, very peaceful, tranquil, almost resigned kind of piano solo. And it goes from that into Tonight. So I guess they're both kind of ways of doing the same thing, and that is you set the stage. And this definitely, if this were, I don't want to call this a concept album, because when I think of that, I think of music that's really trying to tell a bigger story. Something like, since this is a rock show, I'll go ahead and throw out there, something like what Coheed and Cambria tends to do, where their music has this overarching narrative. But I don't know. In the lyrics, I couldn't really pick up on really one story going through the whole thing. But still, it's almost like something that would really launch a rock opera.
Yeah, I couldn't find any real concept in it, and I was looking. I always look for concept. I love concept albums. Hell, I will go ahead and say the last two semesters of school, every time I had a test in the Mac lab, I would throw in my headphones and put on Deceased's Fearless Undead Machines album, which is a death thrash concept album about fucking like a zombie apocalypse and uses sound clips from Night of the Living Dead. Oh, it's so good. I love it so much. But this track wasn't exactly metal, but I don't have a problem. Like, I find it actually kind of weird that when I think about, like, you know, I bitch at like a band like Asking Alexandria, like, that's not fucking metal. It's bullshit. But then when I try to get let's say I like a girl. Actually, yes, I've done this a lot. And I'm like, okay, what do you like? And then they tell me, and then I send them something real soft, like Opeth's Deliverance album is no harsh vocals, no real heavy guitars. It's very light. Very light, very atmospheric. A lot of Cynic's newer stuff is like that. You know, like the stuff you try to send the girl to kind of get them into it. I mean, hell, I'm lucky. The one girl I have dated is like, yeah, I love doom metal. I'm like, whoo. But it's funny that stuff like this song where I'll be like, yeah, this is metal. Like, I know it doesn't sound like metal, but the band's metal and this album's metal. So it totally, you know, fits. Like, I find it funny that I'll oftentimes defend that because I like it. And there's other bands like Asking Alexandria. I can fucking eat my ass. They're shit. That's right. I hate that band so much. Though it's funny.
I have got to go back before the next show I do and actually start listening to some of this stuff so I can have a frame of reference.
Yeah, I can totally. Like I know I said I'd send you like a power metal care package. I can probably send you some of that. You'd probably like a lot of Cynic's newer stuff. It's very progressive, and it's more rock music than metal, but they have some stuff in there, even their earlier albums, that don't feel like metal. It's a lot of jazz fusion. And Opeth, hell, their last album was like a straight up psychedelic rock album to a certain extent. But you know,
it's kind of like we talked about last time, is really, I guess you could call me more, for the most part, of a hard rock fan than a metal fan. I've got some metal that I really dig. Like I said last time, I love Maiden, love Black Sabbath, love Metallica. I will tolerate 80s hair metal for the sheer goofy dumb fuck factor.
I can't do 80s hair metal. Unless it's good. Like Motley Crue, like, go find Pantera's hair metal stuff. Yes, Pantera did hair metal. It's really good.
But, however, otherwise, I'm much more comfortable with hard rock or hard prog rock like Tool, Perfect Circle, Deftones, you know, System of a Down would be another one.
Yeah, I can dig that. I actually had to defend Rush as a metal band to a certain extent. In my 2012 top metal list, they're like, Rush isn't metal. I'm like, dude, listen to Headlong Flight after this, off of this album, and then come back and argue. Like, it was heavy as shit.
Yeah, I mean, hell, though. I'm the type that can see the argument behind. I'm not saying they should have won the Grammy for it, obviously, but I can see how Jethro Tull is classified as metal.
Honestly, I don't know enough Jethro Tull to really argue all the stuff I do know. I'm like, no, they're not. But I don't know all their discography.
I don't agree with it, but I guess I could kind of, maybe, sort of see whence that would come.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it, yeah. You need to go listen to 90s Black Sabbath. I'll have to send you some of it. It is amazing.
Yes. Yeah. I'm always down for good music, especially since I feel like I need some more hard stuff in my collection.
Yeah, you really do. Actually, I found a 90s Black Sabbath album at a local used bookstore for like $6. I'm like, this is worth 20. I'm buying this. So actually what happened was I went to get an extra dollar out of my car and locked my keys in the back seat. So me and my buddy had to break into my car. using rusty wire fence and a wooden stake, like straight up vampire killing wooden stake, to prop open my door and use like the rusted tetanus inducing wire fence piece to unlock the door. Oh, that was so great, but it was worth it because 90s Sabbath is amazing and rare. Because they actually got rid of all the masters.
After that story, I feel like I should go. I feel like I should go outside and hug my car.
Actually, it wasn't too bad. Like, there's a little bit of scratching in there, but I wouldn't notice. Like, yeah. It's up towards the top. It was funny because I wasn't supposed to be there, and that's why I didn't call my mom.
Anyway, hey guys. Congratulate us. We've managed to get through one song of a 14-song album. Live, everyone.
Live, everybody. Yeah. Well, we're only going to go for 13 because I was like, bonus track. We have 13 songs.
Yeah, You please listen to track 13 in its entirety. I'm sorry. If 11-minute songs, I just... Wow. That's a long fucking song.
Yeah, 11 kind of pushes it for me. Like, there's some that I love. Like, there's a few Opeth songs. Like, Master's Apprentices is 10 minutes. And then, I just had it in my head. Black Rose Immortal is 20. And that's about as far as I'll get. Because once you get past 20, I'm like, this is stupid.
Yeah, when it comes to metal, anything getting much over 10 really starts getting kind of tiresome for me.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of, it sort of, from my experience, tends to quit really going anywhere. I mean, some artists can make it work. I mean, Miles Davis has some amazingly long compositions, but they swirl and swoop and evolve and actually go somewhere. Tool is kind of the same way in the sense that they're kind of a slow build sometimes. Through that sentence.
Iron Maiden.
But, yeah, Iron Maiden. Okay, that's another good one. But
Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Yeah, but that song, I was doing something else at the time, probably watching Greatest American Hero, and I looked down at Spotify because I wasn't sure if maybe the song had ended and I had missed it, and they had just transitioned to another one. I went, crikey, fuck, 6.5 minutes and you've got 5 to go. God, no, done.
Yeah, that could be a problem. The only other like really long track that I love to listen to is Dante's Inferno by Iced Earth. It tells the story of Dante's Inferno, and it's awesome.
Well, okay. That's kind of getting my literature boner going because that's one of my three, I guess, depending on how you read them. The Divine Comedy is one of my favorite reads.
Oh, cool. Never read it. I don't read much. Like, if you want to hear what I've read a lot, R.A. Salvatore, a lot of him, and then I've read Chris Jericho's biography 6 times because it was sitting outside my bathroom for 2 years.
But proper reading is fun and mental.
I'm in college. Reading is not fun.
And this would be the part where if we were on Facebook, I would throw up that little 3-second NBC The More You Know GIF.
Yes.
That video from YouTube that I actually keep linked on my desktop just for Facebook comments.
I need to put that one, and then we need to get the G.I. Joe, Knowing Is Half the Battle.
I don't have Knowing Is Half the Battle, but I have The More You Know, and for the times when I realize that I completely misunderstood something, I have just, it's literally just about a two-second clip. From Gilda Radner's SNL days, of her as Emily Latella, just going, never mind.
That's funny. All I have is Scott Steiner saying he's fat, con, you know, Kirk yelling con, and then a clip from the Venture Brothers with Dr. Byron Orpheus saying, I had Taco Bell for lunch. Yeah. Yeah, somebody commented that on I think it was like Jeremy Thomas' status. I'm like, stealing that. But yeah, we're almost a third of the way into this, like the actual on-air time.
One track down, 13 to go.
And it was the first track was the wrong track. That's the best part. But yeah, let's go ahead and get to track two. Let's get this ball rolling before it's like fucking 2 a.m. here and I'm going to be like, fuck this. So here is track two, titled The Second Stone. We'll be right back. I fucking love the guitars in that song. What do you think of that song, Sean? Sean, goddamn. Talking, how does that work?
And this is when he's awake, folks.
I've been making animal noises all night. Calm down.
I love it. I love how the speed of it really complements what feels like the desperation of the lyrics and how it feels like body and mind and soul are all just kind of disconnected. And like she realizes the urgency of the need to just kind of bring them all back together so that she's not just wandering around in this haze for whatever reason she's wandering around it.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I love the speed of the song. It really contrasts well with the opener, that misnomered opener. That totally was not what I downloaded. I don't know what the fuck that song is. Knowing me, I probably just picked the wrong song for my files. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm gonna put that. But yeah, it's definitely a really good contrast. I love it when bands do that, when they kind of have like a quiet. Like a quiet or a slow or something like operatic, and then just like fast guitars. And like the guitars are really intricate in this. And while there's always a good riff in this album, that's not something like when I heard there's a few songs in here where they just go into straight awesome solos, and those are the ones I'm like, yep, yep, Spotify, check. I'm going to check that since now they got rid of the star system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, the other comparison that I gotta once more make to Nightwish is the fact that sometimes when you were listening to Nightwish, you had to sit there and just wonder, what the hell are you even singing about?
Yeah, song about Columbine.
Yeah. You had to kind of really reach with that. With this, the lyrics are... they're pretty grounded and pretty relatable, but without really being simple-minded.
Yeah, it's
an easy-to-grasp theme. It makes them a lot more accessible, also in that they're not quite so... this is going to sound like I'm calling Epica lazy, but they're not quite so ambitious in scope as Nightwish.
It's like they're restrained. Like they know, don't go too crazy yet. Like maybe later. But right now, it's kind of rein it in. Keep everything not too crazy.
But
let's not make a concept album about Scrooge McDuck.
let's not play Stonehenge.
Yeah, that is. I think that's what Mark wants to do. But actually, I'd found out the. Guy who's making the fucking Scrooge McDuck concept album was the main guy behind Nightwish. The guy whose name I could not fucking pronounce. Was it Thomas Hulapainen or something? Yeah, it's that guy. He's the one that's making fucking Scrooge McDuck. And Mark was like, oh, Scrooge McDuck. And I'm like, eh, I never watched DuckTales.
I want to hear a metal version of the DuckTales theme.
I'm sure he does it. I've heard it's like a very ambient, kind of odd album. Well, it's like if you like Nightwish, yeah. If you like Scrooge, DuckTales, okay. Put the two together, sure.
I want my metal Disney Afternoon album, fuckers.
Dude, could you imagine Gargoyles as done by, like, Dream Theater? No, not Dream Theater. They'd overdo it. Why not Epica?
Robert, I could, and check. Yes, I think I have indeed just came a little bit.
Oh, good, good. All right, well, hey, you know, as long as I get to help everybody get a little service when they need it. Yeah. Oh, Gargoyles is such, like, that's one of the best themes ever. Like, you throw that, the Batman animated series theme, and then, well, I can't really think of any other really epic children's themes.
Actually, you know what? I could, man, if I think about it, I wish I could remember just exactly which episodes they were, but I'm pretty sure that in Batman Beyond, there actually are some kind of rocking reworkings sort of some of the animated series score.
Ooh, see, I've been wanting to watch, meaning that we watch Batman Beyond, because that show is good. It's pretty good. Like, you know, it's got quite a legacy to live up to.
It was shockingly good. But, however, in this case, hey, we can talk about Batman the animated series and Batman Beyond.
Another time.
In fact, we'll be talking about it this July, starting on Long Road to Ruin. Check our Facebook page for more details. However, meantime, we have got a third track to get to.
Yes, we do. Yeah. By the way, I did ask Mark. I'm like, hey, Mark, you got an open spot? And he goes, we start at 9. I'm like, shit, I forgot about that. Damn it, job. damn job. It's cutting into my prime podcasting time. Oh, well. The 9:45 an hour is much more worth it. Sorry, guys. But, yeah, that second track's pretty awesome, and that'll lead us right into the third track here. You know, this is the third track off with Quantum Enigma. I never actually said the name of the album yet. Maybe that was an enigma in itself, with the charismatic enigma. Wrestling. Anyways, here's track 3, titled The Essence of Silence. Yeah, that was definitely much more interesting. I don't want to say much more interesting track, but it was a much more different track, really. At least I think so. What do you think?
It was different in that I like how the choral background really filled everything out. Not that with Simone's voice anything ever exactly needs it, but still, it was a nice touch. However, unfortunately, this is one that I gotta call a little bit of a miss, because Mark's vocals are not his vocals. The vocals are fine. I kind of like how the vocal trade-off makes it sound like a weird mashup of Nightwish with Killswitch Engage.
I can see it, especially that I'll be bitching about here in a second.
Yeah. However, the thing is, Mark's lyrics, they sometimes sound like they're words to a WWE entrance song that has yet to be used, and I don't mean that in a nice way.
We're looking at the real deal now. Except I thought it was something about we're looking at the mildew now. I was a stupid. Yeah, my friends have never let that go.
It's more like, it sounds like, and my TV fans out there will know what I mean, it sounds like the lyrics to a Mystic Spiral or Timmy and the Lords of the Underworld song. But it's more like Timmy and the Lords of the Underworld before there was Timmy, when it was just Skylar writing crappy poetry about Stan's little sister.
Oh, God.
Let's see here. Let me see. Yeah, something so strong, my mood has swung, I can't get it out of my head.
I believe that my mind misleads me.
There seems to be cure when tension endures, delusions corrupting my mind. Okay, yeah, that's the one that sounds like a fucking Mystic Spiral lyric. Trent Lane, if these wacky Dutch aren't going to give you a co-writing credit on this song, I'm going to.
Trent Lane. That's great.
When the lyrics are good with Epica, they're really good. However, when they're bad, you just kind of have to shift your attention over to the instrumentals, because they are sometimes really fucking bad.
It's a little bit of cheese. Man, I like cheese.
Another one. When a persistent memory penetrates deep in your mind, allow the silence to destroy your thoughts in every... that's bordering on some Limp Bizkit shit right there.
He did it all for the nookie, so you can take that cookie and stick it up your ass.
Okay. I take it back. I apologize. Few things are Limp Bizkit bad.
I don't want to tempt Marg, because I keep joking about us doing I keep joking about, if we do a fucking Limp Bizkit retrospective, I'm out of here.
But again, you get what I'm saying. Is you listen to the lyrics, and anybody out there who's ever watched WWE, in fact, the Jeff Hardy comparison wasn't really that far off. If you ever the Jeff Hardy's first TNA theme song, it is such mesmerizingly bad seventh grade poetry.
Oh, I used to love that song, because, like, when I first got to wrestling, after I got over the fact that I thought Carlito was cool, God, I was a dumbass as a kid. I was like, yeah, Jeff Hardy, he's the coolest thing ever. I thought he was the coolest thing ever. I still have his shirt, you know, that one that's got, like, his, like, fucking face and body on it that glows in the dark? Yeah,
you actually have for those?
Yeah, I have it, and it glows in the dark. And it's kind of fucking creepy looking.
That shirt is like impenetrable virginity armor.
Well, hey, maybe that would explain why I don't get many dates. I'm like, hey, ladies,
And that's the funny thing is there are actually some wrestlers out there whose merch is kind of cool enough that you would actually wear it someplace else without a second thought. Because it's actually kind of decent looking. Edge has some nice looking stuff. Depending on what you wear, some punk stuff is pretty nice. Jeffrey Hardy. Jeff should not be allowed to design his own merch.
Actually, his TNA shirt was really cool, because that logo that he had at the time, like, it was like a weird looking J with like a H that was towards the top of it. I thought it was a pretty cool logo.
That one wasn't too bad, and I will say this, that's better than that period when WWE had a line of Affliction type shirts.
Oh, God. Fuck
the
Affliction.
Like the kind that even Joe fucking Rogan makes fun of.
It's pretty bad.
I'm open to your thoughts, but I'm going to call this one kind of a dud for me.
The only thing I didn't like was, you know, I was talking about kind of the core drums, that breakdown kind of intro. that was in the verses, I hated that. Like, or at least at first, I hated it. Like, I eventually got used to it. I'm like, okay, this is different. But I was like, this doesn't fit. Like, I was like, just like, I don't need my kill switch engage, my trivium in the middle of I don't need my metal core in the middle of my symphonic metal. You can throw it in once or twice, but there's a few songs where they throw that in there, and I'm like, I don't think it fits quite as well as they would hope it would. But I will give them that it does add another element for them to use. I'll give them that, because, you know, I always think it's cool when a band tries to have a few different things that they can do. Like, Orphan Land is one of my favorite bands, because they have, like, a mix of a little doom metal, some death metal, Middle Eastern folk metal. Like, they've got everything.
I will give them this, and this is something that I can consistently say throughout the entire album. The drumming, while not necessarily groundbreaking. Not groundbreaking in terms of technique, it's just damn solid the entire way through it. It never drops out and leaves anything feeling completely empty. And when it goes hard, it goes hard. It is just perfectly in sync with everything they're trying to do. In fact, as I'll probably keep coming back to throughout some of the songs, really the only weakness I keep coming back to with a lot of them is that I would love to see, just so I can identify one from the other, which lyrics Symbolon wrote and which one Barb wrote.
Oh, it's on Wikipedia.
Okay, I should really just kind of probably keep up with that. Just so that I know kind of who's at fault, because I would hate to credit Bart with a bad lyric just because he sang it.
No, it's Simone did track 2, 6, 8, 11, and 12. So yeah, this was
okay,
all Mark.
Hang on, I'm gonna grab a notepad here and actually have some fun with this and kind of jot this down. So, unfortunately, I happen to have a little steno book with a little split down the middle here, so this is perfect. So, all right, one column for Simone, one column for Mark. Okay, which ones did Simone do?
She did the second stone.
Okay.
Unchain you to.
Numbers. Give me track numbers.
Two.
Okay, two.
Six.
Six.
Eight.
11.
12.
Twelve.
And
okay,
then old Marky Mark did everything else but track seven, because it was an interlude.
Okay, so Mark is responsible for this one.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, Mark, no.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Your lyrics are sounding particularly shitty today. I think maybe it's time to just concede that Simone is the lyrical brains of this band.
I'm thinking so, because I'm looking at Victims of Contingency, and this is starting to bleed into angst.
Oh God, I'm revisiting the lyrics right now myself. I gotta just play the song and play along with us at home, and just let us know if you agree or not. Because, oh yikers!
You will regret every life you've destroyed, unless we're talking about Hitler. That's angsty. But speaking of not Hitler, but angsty, here's track number 4, Victims of Contingency. prepared for the confrontation.
That right there sounds almost like something that would make a big...
Bless you.
Excuse me. Thank you. Almost like it would be a fitting UFC pay-per-view intro.
It sounds like a hate breed. Doesn't it sound like a hate breed song? Time to murder it.
Here's the interesting thing about this, though. Whereas the last song that we listened to actually had, in many places, just flat-out really excruciatingly bad lyrics, these are actually mostly a few lines except here and there. Like, any time I hear "As Pain Fills the Void," I just cringe because it sounds so cliche. The lyrics are actually mostly really good. It's just that some of them sound really out of place when Mark delivers them.
Yeah, I can see it.
They actually sound like they're a better fit for... Almost like Simone should have sung the whole song. Because Mark takes something that almost sounds like it should be a part of an after-school special or a very special episode of Saved by the Bell.
Oh, God, I'm so excited.
But when he does it, I'm so excited. In that special Kill Switch Engage guest vocalist Christian Bale voice of his.
Oh, I specialize in that.
it sounds fucking ridiculous. Those of you who might have listened to The Long Road to Ruin, you might have remembered the bit where I delivered the Jigsaw dialogue in the voice of Barney the Dinosaur.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, if you don't remember it, your nightmares do. Don't tell me otherwise. But that's kind of what we got. That's kind of what we got here. Be prepared for the confrontation. That's an Ultimate Warrior line if ever I heard one. But otherwise, actually, they're really not that bad. It's one of those where, to be completely fair to them, I think that if I had heard the same lyrics delivered by someone like, say,
Bob Dylan,
or in the right setting, kind of properly reworked, someone like Dylan or Tom Waits or Leonard Cohen, I would probably be singing a different tune. Okay. But it's just that when I have to hear Mark delivering them, just something about it just doesn't quite jive. Which is a thing, you're right. It definitely edges perilously close to emo angst, but otherwise, it's a song that seems like it could have had potential.
Yeah, I mean, I was making fun of just some of these, like, initial lyrics. Like, your words are meaningless as pain feels the void. I'm like, that sounds like something I wrote in high school.
Yeah, your deeds are reasonless. You adore yourself. You will regret everyone you envied. Well, I guess it's possible, but still sounds kind of forced.
I mean, I don't mind his growling vocals. Like, I like growling vocals. I can do growling vocals. I love growling vocals. But I kind of prefer Simone just because I like Simone.
Well, it's the right material it does make. Even the title is actually pretty good. Victims of Contingency. Okay, you're basically saying that, you know, everything, nothing you do is your fault. Everything is just product of everything that happened around you and something that someone else did. You're nothing but, well, a victim of contingency. Well, okay, that actually kind of makes sense.
But yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get this. Let's move on to track 5. 4 tracks in nearly an hour. God damn.
Yeah, but we're breezing through them a little bit faster now. So
we're really living up to the Radlinger Broadcasting Network name. Because this is what me and Mark would do. This is what me and Mark do. We'll spend about like an hour on the first five tracks, and at the end we're like, "Yeah, what'd you think?" It was kind of like the last track. Okay, next one. Okay, so here is track number five, "Sense Without Sanity," the Impervious Code. Okay, that's enough of you, Simone. I really dig that song. What'd you think? What'd you think?
You know what? I liked it. That was one of my. This is one of my favorites on the album. Little bit of a long intro, but you know, I kind of like how I listen to the whole thing. Anytime there's that big dramatic string section, that those big strings and synth. It always reminds me a little bit of almost like I want to play this over an old NFL films clip. almost like I want to hear the real deep Keith David-like narration. I forget what the guy's original name was, so forgive me. over this clip, just interspersed something like with 3rd and 10 to go. 10 to go in the fourth quarter with the Giants up 6. Jerry Rice earmarked his all-pro season with a touchdown catch with only 3 seconds to go to put the 49ers up and clinch a 6-0 start to the
season. It's a good thing this wasn't the Cleveland Browns because then we'd be lying. Hi, Jesse.
Vince Young, you lasted 11 days on the Browns roster.
To be fair, that is 11 days longer than my ass would last.
But this is another Mark song. So I'm going to give him credit for this one. It's actually pretty good. The back and forth volleying between him and Simone to start with, our experience will just hamper us and Sense Without Your Sanity and all that. And it sounds a lot more on point with this one. And again, it helps that you've got the perpetual gnashing of the guitars in the background and the rumbling of the drums, and everything is just, they have a good sense of timing about them. And making everything very, very big, trying to add a lot of substance to it, but always making sure that everything is cohesive. I've heard other bands, other really big ensembles, like, this is one reason I can't get that into Slipknot, to be honest with you. Because too goddamn much going on at one time in that band. Too many fucking people in it all at one time, which is unfortunate because I actually think Corey Taylor is pretty talented.
The older I get, the bigger of a douchebag he seems.
Yeah, bigger douchebag, but I've also got that kind of unique ability to, with a few exceptions, and yes, I'm acknowledging there are exceptions out there, so nobody that I know who knows me on Facebook, don't jump on me about, would you say this about Taylor Swift? No, there are exceptions to where I can't separate an artist from the person. To where I just can't say, okay, you're a douche nozzle, but I love your music. So you'll get a pass on some things. There are exceptions to that.
But for the Taylor most part, Swift.
Yeah, Taylor
she
Swift.
She is her more, music. Perpetual
yeah,
middle school.
Kanye West is another one to where I dislike the person, but I got to admit, as a rapper and as a producer, he's unparalleled in his generation. But quite frankly, when it comes to someone like Corey, I got to admit, okay, yes, you're an absolute supreme asshole. you are indeed a horse's ass, and for the most part, I'm not exactly a fan of Slipknot, but you've also done some things that really haven't been that bad. So I can kind of at least appreciate your appeal. But anyway, yeah, getting way off topic here. No, some bands just have so many people and so much. Okay, out of genre, but Fish. Fish is another one. Too damn many people. And just after a while, it all just kind of meanders off after a while into music that, yes, you would indeed have to be fairly high to legitimately say you enjoy. But this, to my surprise, kind of keeps everything together pretty well. I don't know, I kind of had a thought there, but I kind of lost the kernel. I am doing a lot of this off the cuff, though, so bear with me. But, I don't know, Robert, what are your thoughts?
Starting off with Slipknot, I don't mind them. Their fan base is annoying, but that's because they're young. Anyway.
That's definitely true. They're a band that is ruined for me by other Slipknot bands.
Yep, just like them in Sevenfold. Well, I don't like the band that much to start with, but yeah, they're fans. Can't stand them. If you're an Avenged Sevenfold fan, I apologize if I offend you, but I don't apologize. Anyways, yeah, this song, I actually like the way they mix the harsh and the clean vocals this time. Yeah, I like that, we have Simone doing her thing, and then we have old Mark coming in there and doing the more chorusy part of it. I can dig it. I like it when a band can both sing and do harsh vocals, as long as they don't make it formulaic, which is a big problem I have with a lot of the metalcore bands. That actually got me in some trouble. That actually had got me into not really an argument, but one of the a fellow writer on 411 called me a elitist. I don't know if he was kidding, but it pissed me off so much I had to rein back my response before I chewed him up and spit him out. Because I was like, yeah, metalcore has that sing, has the whole sing the, scream the converse, sing the chorus thing. It's kind of annoying and repetitive. He's like, oh, yeah, he's like, it's not that bad. It's better than your damn Cookie Monster vocal. I'm like, oh, you fuck off.
Something about Cookie Monster?
Yes. Yeah, he's like, it's better than his damn Cookie Monster vocals, which is what a lot of people call the little death growl. You've never heard that before?
Hey, somewhat metal newbie. I get where it comes from, but no,
okay.
I've heard that.
Yeah, the first time I heard that phrase was Brian Posehn's Metal by Numbers. Yeah, it's Metal by Numbers. Oh, was it Cookie Monster vocals that yell like a Wookiee? Metal by Numbers, cookie, cookie, cookie. I love Brian Posehn's songs. That's another thing. Everybody should go look him up. He's got more metal than you, which is totally the metal fan base as a whole. And then Metal by Numbers, which is fucking, I love that song.
All right. Anyway, up next, we have hang on, let me get the tally board here. We have got, it's another Simone song. It is, what's the name of it again? It is Unchain Utopia. This sounds like an Enya song.
Oh, God.
The song doesn't sound like Enya, but the title sounds like it'd be an Enya song.
Yeah, because I was about to say, I'm like, not quite. It doesn't grate on my nerves and bring back repressed childhood memories of being in the car with Enya. God, I hate it. So without further ado, not Enya, Unchain Utopia. You can definitely tell the difference between the two of them. At least I think so.
Yeah. These are definitely just maybe some of the least metal lyrics in the entire song. This is almost this is almost Simone being almost high-minded and kind of almost socially conscious, it seems. And it's not a bad song, but it just feels a little out of place, in particular because it takes the strings that really mix so well with all the more rock elements and kind of cuts out the rock elements and leaves you just mostly with just the strings, the choir, and everything else that was really an accent. It's kind of like, at times, it feels to me like the metal equivalent to the idea they had on Seinfeld to make a bakery that sold only the tops of muffins.
Sorry. I have a friend of mine that's been trolling the shit out of everybody on Facebook for the past, like, 2 weeks. You know the whole May the 4th be with you? Yeah, he's been doing it the entire month. Yeah, May the 14th be with you. I love my friends. Anyways, yeah, I actually really do love, like, those orchestral introductions that a lot of these songs have. Well, yes, occasionally they can get a little, like, okay, yeah, I heard that. But, you know, usually they manage to keep them entertaining, you know, engaging. I can definitely dig all that. Yeah, the lyrics, I would say high-minded. They're different. Because, you know, a lot of Mark is, his seem more almost personal, or at least in a more of a personal manner to them. Like, you know, it's a lot of, like, you, like, you know, talking to somebody who's hurt you, whereas Unchained Utopia is...
Robert, you still there? Hey, Robert? You still there, buddy? Okay, which of us dropped out there? Was that me or was that you? Robert? Hello? Live, everyone. If anybody from Rodolich and Broadcasting happens to be listening, please be hitting me up on Facebook right now and letting me know whether you can hear me or whether you can hear nothing. Hang on. Okay, that is me reading here.
Okay, that better fucking be.
You there?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, good. We're back. Live, everyone. You just heard me talk to myself for 2 minutes.
Oh, God. Yeah, because I'd called in, and then it didn't. Yeah, Skype went full retard. I did not appreciate that. And it does that, like, every podcast. Like, when I'll be doing the gaming podcast, I'll randomly cut off after, like, an hour or so. And there's a point where they've just been, like, they'll just, like, okay, well, they just can start talking. Become commonplace. God, that's embarrassing. And it's funny because I'm not in the podcasting cave. I'm actually in my room, which is a lot closer to the router.
Yeah, if you go back and listen later, you'll actually hear me say, if anybody from Ron Lynch and Broadcasting Network is listening, please Facebook me and tell me if you can hear me.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Anyways, where was I? Oh, yeah, I was talking about how... Simone's lyrics seem like she's much more talking to somebody, like, you know, like somebody much more distant, like, you know, like almost like a government official or something, you know, rather than Mark's lyrics, which are much more one-on-one and personal is what it seems to me.
Yeah, which is not, and again, it's not a bad thing. It's just that...
It's different.
It feels so dissonant compared with Mark's lyrics. And I realize that you've got to have some different kind of songs on any given album, as good a thing as cohesiveness is. But at the same time, it's a little like to be kind of polar opposite. It's a little bit like interrupting a System of a Down album with an Amy Lee song or something that was written by Chester Bennington.
Old Chester.
I mean, System of a Down are personal in that a lot of their anger comes from the political situations of their native lands, at which I believe I'm totally blanking on it, and I feel bad that I'm blanking on it now. On where. I know they've got heritage that goes back to somewhere. I'm totally blanking on the name of an entire country. Fuck me.
Lebanon.
Lebanon, thank you. Yes.
There we go.
Yeah, I mean they're from a political hotbed. So that really informs a lot of their social consciousness. They kind of see the gravity in a lot of things that many Americans in particular take for granted. On the other hand, you know, it's not like you're going to hear a song that's wholly devoted to a bad breakup that Serge went through. Interesting as that would be. Or, you know, about whether Serge had a bad relationship with his parents, or his parents split up when he was very young, or something like that. So it's a good song. It just sounds kind of awkwardly placed on this album. Almost like maybe Simone should just do a solo album of some of these bigger picture, more reflective songs.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, at least they keep about even with their songs. You know, like one will do this much and another one will do. You know, they're about half and half on lyrics.
That's true. But next, we have actually got another Mark song. We have got The Fifth Guardian.
Actually, we have an instrumental.
Yeah, interlude, The Fifth Guardian.
Yeah, well, when you were saying Mark's song, actually, he didn't write the lyrics. There are no lyrics.
Okay, you're right. I'm an asshole.
Well, I mean, hey, at least your Skype works.
yeah, my stupid little Motorola Droid Razor held up its reception.
Yeah, because if this happens and we go off to fucking recording time, God help us. Hey, maybe...
If that happens, you're just going to be totally on your own. Or maybe I'm going to be on my own.
Hey, well, we could just do that, like what that time me and Teasley did, and do a 15-minute plug podcast.
All right.
That got better ratings than our regular episode, too.
Anyway, do we want to bother listening to this one, or do we just want to move on to the next song that actually... Well, yeah, I mean, it's a track, so it's fair. Let's give it a quick listen and just a quick run.
Just give it a little preview. So here you go. The Fifth Guardian interlude.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, let's cut it off before it gets epic, right? Doesn't that sound like it came out of Lord of the Rings?
You know, it really does. And it also reminds me of the main interspersed theme to Shrek, actually.
What? Yeah, Lord of the Rings. I'm thinking Shrek.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't remind me of something that Howard Shore would have probably composed for the Lord of the Rings soundtrack, but I'm just saying that that's what the vocal part in particular reminds me of, is it reminds me of part of the score to the soundtrack. God, there's a way to make that movie more epic. When before you and I went on the air, we were talking about how a lot of this music would be great to play while gaming. This is a song that, if I ever go back and play Assassin's Creed Revelation again, I am going to totally play this while I am just running around Constantinople.
Do it. In hell, next time.
Or if sometime soon I should end up playing Dragon Age or Skyrim.
Yeah. See, fortunately, I'm playing Symphony of the Night right now, which has, like, one of my favorite soundtracks in gaming. So, there's not much of a boss.
No, you just don't play anything else over a Castlevania soundtrack. You just don't fucking.
Yeah, you really don't.
No.
Like, if you do, you should be smacked with a fish.
No, that is one of the... That manages to combine the best of all the Castlevania soundtracks.
You really do. Yeah, it's got a little greatest hits in there. It's got Bloody Tears. It's got Dracula's Castle. Oh.
Actually, somebody else you might enjoy, if you've never listened to him, you should go to YouTube and look up Family Jewels 7X. Family and then Jewels is spelled J-U-L-E-S, his first name, and then the number 7, and then X. He does rock covers of video game soundtracks, and he's actually done a few from Castlevania.
Oh, cool. Yeah, there's another guy that I liked, E-Rock 331 or something. He does metal covers of, like, everything. Like, he did Castlevania. He's done Game of Thrones. He does some pop music every once in a while. It's really awesome. And then there's Smooth McGroove, who does a cappella.
That a cappella version of the DuckTales Moon theme.
He's a very talented man. Watch his videos. Give him your money through advertising revenue. He deserves it.
Yes. Don't be a dick. Turn off Adblock.
Oh, I turn off Adblock for all YouTube and Blip because I want those people to keep making content.
Well, I will say this, and then those who know me personally probably can guess what my reasons are. I turn off Adblock for a few certain producers, but for certain people of whom I'm not especially particularly fond, I will sometimes occasionally forget to turn it off. But generally speaking, I'm saying that's right. I'm saying I'm wrong, and I should learn to avoid doing that, quit being so petty. But hey, you know, you screw with my friends, I bear a grudge. But no, generally speaking, of the people we just mentioned, especially, yes, go to YouTube, turn Adblock on, like, subscribe, enjoy their videos, give them feedback, give them monies, so that they will keep making awesome, rocking video game music. Or in Smooth McGroove's case, awesome a cappella video game music, just with a very rocking beard.
And a cat.
Yes, and a kitty.
It's a very, very cute cat. But all right, speaking of cute cats.
We have successfully navigated one half of the Quantum Enigma. I can't decide if that's the best or worst album title ever. So, onward to track 8, which is a Simone song, Chemical Insomnia.
I don't know what chemical insomnia.
Or as I like to call it, coffee.
Oh, God. Cocaine. Cocaine accessories. Oh, where'd he go? Windows 8, stop. Stop it, Windows 8. Fuck me, Jesus. All right, track 8, chemical insomnia. Cocaine.
Don't tell me it's a fuck you.
Cut it off, because now we're officially recording and hoping and praying Skype isn't a dick. But yeah, what do you think of that song? What do you think?
I'm the sanctity is shifting gravity, Hulk Hogan. Addiction's growing faster, making you go insane toward WrestleMania. Ivory Fang, you're smiling. You'll have to break the habit. I suggest something like Nicorette Gum to break the chemical addiction, and perhaps an e-cigarette to maintain your oral fixation.
At least it wasn't his anal fixation. Because then Sigmund Freud would be like, ho-ho!
Okay, this is one where... And I'm sorry I'm focusing so much on the lyrics here, but actually this was an album where I really, after a while, didn't have much to say about the instrumentals because they're so consistent. But the first verse is actually okay, but then when you get to a lyric where you're talking about come undone in nightly rhyming, and then the next line doesn't fucking rhyme.
Maybe that was the joke.
Absent sanctity is shifting gravity. What?
See, I didn't pay attention to much of the lyrics when listening to this, because I tend to just listen for music and then go from there. Didn't this opening feel very Nightwishy?
Tame the lion that's hiding the need to be free.
Dive into ecstatic pop bliss, man. God.
Your instinct is fading, a thumping sound impedes, the daybreak is a waking chemical.
You sure this wasn't... Sure this wasn't on Ultimate Warrior's last speech?
Oh, God, we shouldn't joke about that awkwardly timed masterpiece.
That was really weird. We're like, was this suicide? I mean, after that speech, that sounds really suicide-y.
I think the really funny thing is that I'm keeping kind of a crib sheet handy here, and the one I went to in particular for this song, typos are not your friend, azlyrics.com. Forbidden fruit tastes better when it can numb the bran.
Oh, yeah, that's know. Here too. Numb the bran, that's right. Bran cereal, fuck you.
I don't know. Brand is pretty null and bland as it is. I don't think it needs to be dense.
Numb the brand. Make sure you can taste all the strawberries.
Or, or white bricks and darkened stones are building the fundament.
Building the fundament. Sounds like a really fun bottle of ketchup. The fundament.
So, this one, it's a miss, I think, for being an actually well-written song. Although, again, you know, great backing that's fun to listen to if you can find a way to actually kind of cut the vocals out. But, God, you don't want to think too hard about the lyrics.
Well, yeah, especially that brand cereal, Jesus.
She has got some serious, deep-seated emotional issues about grape nuts.
Well, yeah. Maybe it was like a grape. Maybe that's going to kill her dad. Maybe he choked on a grape nut or something.
How do you choke on a grape nut?
I mean, how does one choke?
You would have to have, like, the esophagus of a caterpillar.
Maybe it was a bunch of them all at once. She swore from that day on that she would avenge her father and become the Great Nut Slayer.
I could think of a lot of ways Great Nut could kill you, namely making you shit out internal organs.
That's Taco Bell.
Well, I don't know. Taco Bell, from my experience, will make you shit Taco Bell pretty effectively by itself. It doesn't need the help.
That's true. I mean, hey, at least Taco Bell's better than the omelet I got at IHOP. It's like supposed to be chorizo with jalapenos, and it tasted like ass. And it was supposed to have red salsa, and it was fucking looked like hot dog chili.
Okay, don't you blaspheme chorizo. I am from the land. I am living in the land of chorizo.
I adore chorizo. I could not taste it for the near, like, fucking small baseball size of sour cream that they, like, little dollops they put on there. And then that fucking salsa that looked like hot dog chili. It was brown.
Well, I just got to tell you right now, I think until Mark comes back to re-host the show, half the fun of listening to the Metal Hammer of Doom is going to be hearing us talk for a few minutes about the song and then wonder what the hell we're going to transition into.
Me and Mark did that. We once, during the Iced Earth podcast, we discussed the song, and then we got into a discussion on whether that video that has Bell in the ghetto, you know what I'm talking about, whether or not that was racist. So we kind of debated that for a little while, and then I watched the video while the song was playing, and then we debated that furthermore. He was like, is it racist because it's perpetuating the stereotype? I'm like, well, technically it's not, because it's members of the stereotype who are mockingly, you know, making fun of it and kind of acknowledging that it's a thing. Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, that I mean, hell, that's what happens when I do podcasts. I ramble, unless it's Sentai Rider, and then I'm, like, on point because it's super serious shit with all those spandex and children's shows.
We have another Mark song next, and it's Reverence, Living in the Heart. And you can just kind of tell from the title this is going to be, yeah, pretty much what we're expecting from Mark at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully the next intro won't be as Nightwishy, because that last one was really Nightwishy.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing, I'm just saying. Nightwishy. But yeah, track 9. So close, yet so far away to the ending. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
love those. Ah, I fucking love the double bass. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, like that is, this is the song that I definitely noticed where it's just like, brrr, I'm like, oh, double bass, I love you when you're not being played by stretchy-eared douchebags. God, that is a trend I never understood. Maybe it makes me sound old, but I'm like, stretching your earlobes, one, that looks painful, two, I heard it stinks, and three, that looks odd. I mean, this is coming from a man that wears a denim jacket for like a half of the year because I look fucking cool, but
It depends for me on the extent to which they're stretched. I mean,
that's true.
But one of my best friends lives right here in Arizona. Has her earlobe stretched a little bit, but on her it's kind of odd because it's one of the few really kind of out there kind of edge things that she sort of does on an otherwise actually really pretty normal look.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it too much. It's just when they get kind of like silly. Large, like, you know, when you're throwing like fucking caps to your 2 liters through it, I'm like, okay, time to calm down. Yeah, so I find it ironic that stuff like that and nose piercings and tattoos are really edgy, yet really everybody's doing it. Technically, is it that edgy? Like, I went to community college. I'm telling you, calf tattoo, nose stud, rolling book bag. Every 40-year-old mother, bam.
And you see, and I will defend some of those things because actually I think that on the right woman, and I actually know two of them that I can think of right off the top of my head I could say this about. For some reason, I actually find a little nose stud, not like a full-on nose ring, but just like a little shiny stud, to be actually incredibly attractive. Tattoos, okay, it depends on what you're getting. If you're getting one just for the sake of getting one, no, I'm not sure how I feel about that. But on the other hand, if you're getting something because it's got a real deep-seated meaning to you, like the kind that you're getting it for you and not to necessarily show off for anybody else, okay, more power to them. But if you're one of those guys who gets, say, the tribal-looking bison tattoos.
Yeah.
And it's very clear from looking at you that there's very little tribal heritage in fucking Omaha, Nebraska. Or you're one of those people who just are actually, well, not to sound too sexist here, but women are a little worse about the guys. But the random kanji, guys, stop.
Yeah, there's only one person is allowed to have tribal tattoos. That's Tyson Tomko.
Okay, The Rock hits a tribal tattoo. Okay, guys, that's one thing. He's half Samoan. He's not very removed at all from his actual Samoan ancestors.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he's got an excuse. On the other hand, hey, white bread dude bro.
Yes, other white bread dude bro.
I'm sorry, but your tribal tattoo means nothing more than was really into Bill Goldberg in the 90s.
Yes.
That's about
it. Yeah, Tomko is the only person who's allowed to have it because he went all out and was like, fuck it. All the back, all the shoulders, and the chest.
Right. But anyway, hey, this time we actually reversed it. We actually went to the non-sequitur before we got to the song.
Yeah, well, hell, there's sometimes we do that, Mark's just like, yep, next song.
keeping this one pretty brief, this one is good. The lyrics are quite uplifting, and they manage to avoid some of the nonsense that we were cracking wise at previously. It's really pretty simple. Simple. Lyrics like "Don't let them pull you down," "Live in the heart, experience the now," or just a simple line: "Reward your, reward yourself. It's just a simple message of just be good to yourself. That's all there is to it. Tomorrow's tomorrow. Yesterday was yesterday. Your right now is what's going to build on everything that's to come. So just focus on that and make the most of it. And that's good. It's just that at this point in the album, the other negative thing that I can say about it is consistency is good. So is cohesiveness. A running theme is a good thing. However, by this point in the album, you do get to the point where even if something has a particularly tasty double bass line, the feel is all starting to kind of run together. And there's just not much differentiating.
Yeah, it is starting to get to that point at the end of the album where you're just like, okay, that's cute. Like, the double bass is really the thing I recognized in this song, but otherwise I was just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I said that I was listening so close to the lyric, is because for as much as I enjoy the instrumentation, it's just bed the same thing time and again and again and again and again, and point to where you're just begging, guys, throw in a ballad, please. Begging you.
Oh, I see what you did there. The next song's kind of ballady. Yeah, foreshadowing. But yeah, I mean, this song was solid. I mean, what do we get? The overall thoughts will be a little different, but yeah, this was the album does start to lose a little bit here because, you know, 13 tracks, not counting the bonus track, that's a lot. And eventually there's a certain point where the band can get a little, what's the word for it, a little long in the tooth when it comes to their songs. But here's that ballad, because we have 44 minutes to fit in 4 songs and plugs, so we need to...
I think we can do it.
Let's hope, because if we don't, well, we're fucked. So here it is. All right, track 10 is titled Omen, the Ghoulish Malady. Something different, right?
That definitely changed it up a little. That slowed it down just a touch. The same kind of uplifting lyrics as the last song. That sometimes when there's nobody else around you that you can really depend on, the only friend that you've got, the only person you can definitely 100% trust is yourself, which, you know, good theme. Again, keeps the lyrics pretty basic. But no, I do like they swapped up the feel for something that's still big, but doesn't feel like it's racing toward its conclusion quite so fast.
Yeah, this was like a really nice palate cleanser. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was a nice kind of get all the taste of everything else, like, you know, kind of out of your mouth. Give you something kind of similar, maybe, to what you're going to be consuming in a second. But, you know, just kind of clear the air, spray the air freshener, you know, whatever. it was a fun song. I liked it. I love a good ballad. Okay, I don't love a good ballad. I love a well-done ballad. Because I usually am kind of more taken aback by ballads, because every rose has its thorn. God, I hate that song so fucking much. But yeah, I mean, this was still a pretty good ballad, especially because Simone can sing, and she does it well, and ballads. So yeah, got anything else on this before we go to the next song? Wow, this is like the fastest song analysis we've done yet.
No, I really got nothing. We summed that one up. Pretty well. So now it's onward to track number 11, Canvas of Life.
They said Canvas of Life. Like, that would be interesting. It sounds like the name of a reality show, doesn't it? Canvas of Life.
I speak from experience. Living in Kansas is barely living.
See, I don't know how you do it. I couldn't do it. I mean, hell. Where I live, I
barely made it 8 months, and I have off and on had family try to encourage me to say, no, well, if you're struggling for money, you can always move back home. Like, no.
Bad dog.
No. I am staying right here in the desert.
Yes. The desert is good.
It is my moment of, I ain't going back to jail.
That's a good way to put it. All right, here's track 11, Canvas of Life.
Okay, that is definitely a palate cleanser. I mean, it may not be everybody's cup of tea, but you got to admit, points for at least trying with that one.
Oh, it was beautiful. I was just saying, like, oh, I thought the last one was the ballad. No, it's like, yeah, let's kind of wind it down. Here's the wind down ballad, and then here's the ballad. I mean, it was a beautiful song. So well done. It was a really well done ballad.
Yeah, it really was. And it really displays the versatility that they're capable of, which at the same time also then proceeds to kind of make it a little bit frustrating that we don't get to hear them experiment a little more often.
Yeah, I'd kind of, sometimes I do wish they would do something like that, but at the same time, I mean, this band is doing really well with what they do, so it's almost like, do you, it's almost like, do you want them to risk it?
It's definitely a matter of stick with what works, don't mess with success, keep your aces in their places. But at the same time, it does, and I can also see how it would also kind of, it makes it all the more refreshing and all the easier to appreciate on the rare occasions when they do really strip things down kind of like this. But it really is one of the more surprising highlights of the whole album.
Yeah, it really is. It's a beautiful song. Which is, like I said, it's just kind of funny because I thought the malady, something that sounds like a ballad. And I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of ballady. And Canvas of Life, I'm like, oh shit. But it, I mean, hey, you got 13 tracks. If you can throw in a half ballad and a full ballad in there, fuck it, why not?
Well, fortunately for us, the last two tracks we're going to talk about get right back down to the business of being epica. Just from looking at the lyrics, you can read Natural Corruption, and you can kind of tell that this is very light. In fact, actually, stand corrected. This is a Simone song.
Yeah. Yep, this next one in Canvas of Life were.
Mark song.
Oh, snap. Maybe they're starting to meld as one.
Marcone. Simark.
Simark. God, that sounds like some made-up power in an anime. We should tell Mark about it. Maybe he has the Simark.
Some weird hulking Dutch abomination that just lumbers at us and just mumbles, kill me.
That sounds like almost every person on the World's Strongest Man tour. That really is like an event in my house. Like, oh, World's Strongest Man's on TV. Let's watch it. That and Ninja Warrior. Like, that's like a fucking party at my house.
That, God, World's right. You mean that thing that ESPN plays at night between the Scripps Howard National Spelling Bee and poker?
Actually, they don't show it anymore. Now it is the CBS. No, now it's the CBS Sports Network. They have a different sponsor.
Oh God! When I was a kid, that was an ESPN staple.
Oh yeah, I know. It used to be Metrix sponsoring it. Now it's some casino.
Of course, Metrix would sponsor it.
Yeah, they used to. Now it's some casino. Because I was like, but Metrix made so much sense. But thinking of things, speaking of things that make so much sense, let's go ahead and get to the penultimate track of this review. This is track number 12, and it's titled Natural Corruption.
We'll be right back.
Man, another day goes by.
Yeah, that song is kind of the best of both worlds.
You
so
get
speak.
The best of both worlds.
Of the two songwriters. But it is definitely another one where after the last song, you listen to it, now it's back to sounding like Epica.
Yeah. I love it. It's like Natural Corruption. I'm like, Natural Corruption of the last two songs? Yeah, I was just reaching for that. But yeah, I mean, I actually really enjoyed this song, oddly enough. I guess because it has a fucking killer solo towards the end. And there's not a ton of, like, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't given Epica solos nearly the credit they deserve.
Yeah, no, we haven't. Like, it's pretty fucking killer solo. And there's a few really good ones on this. Like, they don't throw them in every song, which is fine, because they don't need to. But, like, towards the ending of the song, I was just like, damn, that's awesome. Huh? Check.
Yeah, that's definitely ending it on a high point and leaving you wanting more.
Yeah, which is funny, because if you wanted more, so that's the next track.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All 11 minutes of it.
Yes. Yeah, so to wrap this up, because like I said, we've now had 30 minutes left, which, you know, no rush. We can, I mean, hell, we can get one song and all of our plugs in 30 minutes. But yes, here is the finale to the somewhat conceptual album called of the Quantum Enigma. The Quantum Enigma, which is Kingdom of Heaven Part 2, which makes me wonder, is this the sequel to the movie Kingdom of Heaven? I think I'm the only person that remembers that was a movie. Anyways, here it is. Thank you. like a lot of that song. Oh, well. I mean, there's a lot of song to play. This wasn't as bad as during the Dream Theater podcast where I was like had to play 5 minutes just to find a spot where the singing started.
Yeah, it's this is definitely metal for literaries.
Yeah, I get that.
And this one kind of brings the whole theme together about how really the theme of the album being that your state of mind is ultimately responsible for whatever is around you, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just, does it have to do it in such a damn long song?
Yeah, they did kind of stretch it out a bit. Like, you know, I listened to the first 2 minutes before I went to work and then listened to the last 9 when I got home. I was like, damn. Come on, guys. Actually, it was almost 10. Like, it was nearly 7 seconds away from a 12-minute song.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it. I kind of gave up on this one after about 6.5 minutes.
Man, I listened to it all the way through. I liked it, but I feel like it could have done better with a little trimming. Giggity.
Yeah. I mean, it feels almost like it has enough to it that almost you could have taken the lyrics and almost made 2 songs out of them. And like developed each set into something unique on its own, or maybe make one an album opener and another an album closer. So at least it makes sense to call it the Kingdom of Heaven Part 2.
That's what I was confused at. I was like, "Where's Kingdom of Heaven Part 1?"
Yeah, like I had to kind of double take on that, and kind of when I saw the title of it, kind of look back at the track list and go, "Did I miss a song?"
Yeah,
I don't remember Kingdom of Heaven Part 1. You're more familiar with the band than I am. Was there a song called Kingdom of Heaven on another album?
I mean, I'm not super familiar. I only really know this album and the last album, Requiem for the Indifferent, which was awesome. So, let's look here. Kingdom of Heaven comes from Design Your Universe off their 2009 album, which is actually ironic because that song is part of a 6-part song called A New Age Dawns.
Well, okay, there we go again. We just made ourselves look like assholes on your own show.
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, we just didn't know. It'd be different. Like, man, they're fucking stupid. Why do you call it Part 2? What are they, the Traveling Wilburys?
That was our what is the deal with airline food moment.
You know, what is the deal with airline food? I mean, it wasn't that bad. I just didn't know what. I was like, Kingdom of Heaven Part 2. Which part
yeah.
one? Because I knew there wasn't a part one on the last album, so that's why I was confused. But, I mean, hey, that could be just like that time Dream Theater had, like, a fucking, like, what, 6-part song between 6 albums or something?
Well, in any case, that really wraps up the album. And
yeah, it does, in a very long manner.
Because neither of us listened to the bonus track. And really, the thing is, this is a headphones album. I would dare even say that were I to want to use this as kind of an alternate soundtrack to whatever game I might be playing, I would probably be more likely to just buy the album, put it on my iPod, make it a playlist, and just stick my earbuds in.
Yeah.
Just kind of rock it that way. Because otherwise, it's not one of those that you can really play kind of around the average person. I mean, there's some metal that's very accessible to people who ordinarily don't consider themselves metal fans. I don't know that this would be it. Not necessarily because it's too rough or it's too raw. Like, the opposite, actually, the lyrics are extremely inspirational and uplifting. It's just that the massive orchestral approach, the lack of a hook, the sometimes lack of a chorus, it makes it very tough for someone to just casually digest. It's not radio friendly, is what I'm saying. And not a lot of metal is.
Which is fine. You know, I'll take it.
I mean, you know, for every Metallica out there, there's five Slayers.
Yeah, there really are.
Yeah, at least. So, but still, I would call it one that's definitely worth listening to if you're into power metal. And actually, if you know somebody who maybe you might want to get into power metal, this is something I would suggest. Actually, I would suggest it more than Nightwish, because lyrically, this is a little more accessible. It's a lot less rambling. You just have to be careful that you don't manage to lose yourself in how, after 13 songs, 11 or so of them all start to sound almost identical.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, yeah, that's actually why I threw this album away, because I knew you were like, I want to get more into metal. I'm like, hey, this album will do it. Because I knew Epica, such a good band, have a really good reputation. But, this is actually, believe it or not, one of my favorite albums of the year so far. It'd probably be about, so far in my top five, and by the end of the year, if I listen to the solid 120 like I did last year, it'll make the list. It'll probably be in the top 20. It is a very accessible album. It's a pretty easy to listen to album, really. Like, you can just throw it on in the background or something, and like the symphonic nature of it really carries it along for you. The lyrics are really good if you actually want to listen into it. Like, the music's well done. The vocals are great. Like, I don't think it's beaten. It's not beaten my, like, top two albums, which are the new Triptychon album, which I wanted to review, but nobody would listen to that because not that many people know who Triptychon are, and Storm Warrior, who are awesome. Like, there's a lot of good power metal this year. But yeah, this album's great. I don't know if it's as good as their last album, Requiem for the Indifferent, but, I mean, they're both great albums. So, I mean, shit, if you love that album, go listen to their 2012 album. I feel like that one's a little better. Yeah, I think so. I really love that album. It was so good. But, it's really well done. It's very ironic that it took us almost a year, like a solid year to do one power metal album with Mark. And just now we've done a full retrospective and another album with... possibly more on the horizon until he gets back. Because really, there's just not much. I mean, there's some pretty good death metal that's coming out. Like, Arch Enemy's got a new one coming out, but not been a whole ton of them like there were last year up to this point. Like, hell, last year, once we hit June, that's when all the stuff came out. But when we get to June, I know Mark wants to do Steel Panther, and I think he wants to do Scrooge McDuck. No, he wants to do Body Count, the new Body Count album. That's going to be fun. Oh, shit. That's going to be great. But, yeah, let's go ahead and get the plugs, because we got 15 minutes, and I know mine take up, like, 20. So,
I've got some work that I've got to get to for day/night/24/7 jobbing things. So I am just going to get the obvious plug out of the way for this week right now, and that is the fact that in 7 days, it is me, it's Robert Winfrey, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio on the Rod Lichten Broadcasting Network. It is the conclusion of our fascinating Fast and Furious retrospective. We went through the three really lackluster movies last time. Well, correction, one's kind of a guilty pleasure, and two progressively, depending on who you believe, progressively worse ones. And this time we get around to the surprisingly admirable rebirth of the franchise with Fast and Furious, Fast 5, and Fast 6. It's The Return of Vin Diesel and The Rise of The Rock. Me, Robert Winfrey, Long Road to Ruin, 7 days from now. Blog Talk Radio, the Rivalist and Broadcasting Network at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, Mark, hope all is continuing to be well on the Jonas Exodus, should you happen to catch the show. Be sure to check out all our fine Rodolich and Broadcasting programming, from Robert Winfrey's Everyone Loves a Bad Guy to the Metal Hammer of Doom, and right squarely in between, Jason Teasley, Robert Cooper, and Jesse Starcher on From the Cheap Seats. And please, by all means, go check out Long Road to Ruin over on Facebook, because that is where we post many of the updates about future shows for our entire lineup of hosts. And in the meantime, this is Sean signing off from the Metal Hammer of Doom, saying be well, be safe, behave, and never dull your colors for someone else's canvas. Have a good night, Robert.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. So thanks, Mr. Sean Comer, yet again, for jumping in here. If I would have done this album by myself, it would have been an hour of me being like, yeah, you know, like it was pretty good. I could have done without this or that. But, you know, it was not very good. So, yeah, plug time. You know, the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, as Sean said, is the home for all your podcasting needs. There's the 411 Ground and Pound radio show, which is 8 p.m. Sunday nights, which is Robert Winfrey, Pat Mullen, and the Wildcat Jeff Harris, as they talk MMA, you know, mixed martial arts news. You know, they do fight reviews, fight previews. It's pretty good stuff. I listen to them weekly. There's also From the Cheap Seats, which Sean plugged, myself, Jason Teasley, and Jesse Starcher. So we go through the wonderful world of sports. They're mostly football. And hopefully we'll be on this coming Thursday. I'm not quite sure what we're going to be talking about. Probably NFL draft stuff. But, yeah, that'll be a good time. There's also this podcast, which I'll be back in two weeks on Tuesday night, probably about 11 o'clock. Not sure what we're going to do. I've got some ideas. I'm going to talk to some people, maybe figure something out, you know, see what's up. There's also my Sentai Writer podcast. That's your home for all things Tokusatsu. That's your Kamen Rider, Power Rangers, Super Sentai, Godzilla, Ultraman. We got so much down the... we got so much we need to talk about, but unfortunately with my work schedule, it's making it hard to record, but hopefully sometime during the day next week we'll get some recording done, because, you know, we got a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on. There's a lot that, you know, all the Toku faithful really need to hear about from us. So hopefully keep an eye out on that. If you've listened to our show before and you like it, go find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ Sentai Writer Podcast. That is SENTAIRIDER podcast. Yeah, it's pretty good. You can find us there. You could tweet me at The Metal Coop. Email us at SentaiWriterPodcast@gmail.com. We could dig that. Yeah, it's pretty great. And finally, the Cooperative Multiplayer Podcast, which is usually Sunday nights at midnight, but this week we are Wednesday night at midnight. I'm not sure exactly what we're talking about, or at least all of it. I know we're going to be talking about Microsoft making a connectless Xbox One. That's right. Those bitches went back on their word. Who would have thought? So stay tuned for that. It'll be myself, Sean Garmer, and I don't think Daniel Anderson's going to be on this week. But, you know, eventually we're going to get our host, Stephen Randall, back, and it's going to be great. It's good to get a Canadian in the house, because without that, it's three Southerners, which is funny. I've noticed there's a lot of Southerners on podcasts I'm on. But anyways, that's all for those. And then finally, there's the 411411mania.com. The Hammer of Doom News Report will hopefully be back sometime this month. I'm considering maybe some format changes. I mean, right now, I just got to get used to actually doing work. Yeah, support your local Lowe's Home Improvement. They employ me. I like getting money. But, yeah, I'll just have to see where everything goes with that. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the future. The future's looking up. It's a nice, cool, calm summer. Hopefully you're going to see some awesome movies, you know, do a lot of podcasts, work, maybe get a date. Single ladies. Oh, God, that's cheesy. Anyways, I'll stop rambling. I'm sure somewhere Jesse Starcher has just timed my plugs to see how long it took me this time. But, you know, I thank you, everybody, for listening to the Metal Hammer Doom. You know, it means a lot to me when anybody listens to any work I'm on. Because, you know, while I would do this for nothing, I don't like to do this for nothing, you know. I like for, you know, at least get some listener base, you know, interact with you guys. So if you ever want to email me, it's themetalcoop@gmail.com. So if you ever feeling froggy, email me, tweet me. It's pretty great. But, yeah. In 2 weeks, not sure what we're doing. Maybe I'll talk to Pat Mullen, get a retrospective going, maybe do an album review. I don't know. See what's going on. But until that time, make sure you be well, be safe, behave, and keep the metal faith alive.